So what keeps you going? Because it's not particularly easy, especially since you don't get an amazing amount of approval of some of your neighbors, or is everybody cheering you along? Way to go, Don and Marie.
You know, you nailed it. I have a file now in the filing cabinet where I save the cards that we get from people. And some of them are pretty overwhelming. And some of them are over the top. Thank you, folks, for doing your part to save the world. Like, really, really big stuff. We get emails. We get phone calls from people after they get their chicken order or their turkey or their pork or whatever, and they say, you know, this is just... We can't believe that the food from a farm is you know, looks as nice or nicer the way it's cryovac as it does in the store, but when you put them together, when the one from the store thaws, it kind of sags, whereas yours is nutrient dense, and they're giving us compliments and observations that I never thought the average person would think about, and so. We definitely have cheerleaders, Dietmar, and a lot of them are the biologists and the ecologists and those people, because they have to be very careful about how hard they push perhaps some government policy that government doesn't really agree with. So if Don and Marie are doing something on their farm, they can use us and do the end run. Mm-hmm. And that's what we find happening is they'll say, well, I really can't comment on that, but if you would like to go and see this farm... And we've had people from in British Columbia, they in their Department of Agriculture, they have a stewardship part of it. And two people from that ministry came to Alberta, and they phoned us and they said, we've been told that you're putting a lot of these stewardship practices into place on your farm. Could we come and see it? So they spent about half a day. And I tell everybody that no matter who comes to our farm, I usually take something and learn something from them. And they're telling me they're learning from me, but no, I'm learning from them. And this particular fellow, I had just put up our 150 bluebirds houses that I made from junk lumber. And so as we're driving around the farm, he says, you got quite a few birdhouses, eh? And I says, yeah. He says, what's your target audience? Well, I said, we want to have bluebirds. So he says, can you stop? I want to get out and have a look at them. So pulled up to a bluebird house. Got out, and he looked at it, and he said, did you say you were looking to have bluebirds in here? I said, yes. Well, he said, that hole isn't big enough. He said, that's an inch and a half hole. I said, absolutely. Well, he said, eastern bluebirds, they can get in there, but he said, we're in western Canada. So he said, I don't think you're going to have much success. Now, a mountain bluebird, which lives around here, he says, they're a little bit beefier. And he says, some will be able to get in there, but he said, some won't. And he said, if you can bore that hole out another 16th of an inch, you will get more bluebirds. Next, that fall, I went around with my cordless drill, and I bored those holes out. And next spring, we went from, I think it was 8 houses to 16 houses. And there again, there's a bit of a metaphor there. A very small change can make huge change. Just a small adjustment can make huge change. So I learned a lot from that visit.
So people came from BC, from the Minister of Agriculture. What about our Minister of Agriculture, who is our local MLA? Did he come to your farm?
I've thought of inviting him. I have. I've actually discussed that with a few close friends. And they said, maybe we have to be bold. Maybe we have to be bold.
No natural response from that department to want to come? Because you're in a
good situation. Oh, gosh. Alberta Agriculture had a conference last fall, and I got a phone call in April, and this conference was going to be on October 17th, and I got a phone call in April from the organizing committee for this. It's for all the employees for Alberta Agriculture. There was going to be potentially 600 people there, and they said, we're asking double the amount of people we need for the conference to speak, to put their names on the list, and can we put your name on the list? And I said, sure. So I never heard anything, and Marie said, well, I guess you got out of that one, eh? And I guess probably about an hour later, the phone rang, And they said, we want you to come and speak. Well, I said, what do you want to talk about? And she said, it's up to you.
Oh.
So I was really, really getting anxious, eh?
I never let Don just speak.
But something happened along the way. And I've told this to Dietmar, but very few of even my close friends know this. But Marie and I received a phone call on September 17th of last year from California. And I was having lunch, and the phone rang. Marie wasn't home. So I looked, and it had a California number. So I thought, well, it's somebody begging for money or something. So I never answered it. So all of our kids live outside Canada. So I check my email in the morning. I check it at noon, and I check it at after supper. So I went and checked my email after lunch, and here was this email from the lady in California, or from California. So I went back. The email said, I just left a message in your phone. She says, congratulations. Your farm is being awarded. It's called the Pollinator Advocate Award for all of Canada. And we are going to fly you to Washington, D.C. to the conference. You will be honored at the embassy, Canadian embassy, at a special buffet. And so I went and listened to the phone call. And sure enough, it was the same message. And so I phoned the lady right away, and I told her that this is unbelievable. Well, she said, we got some nominations. And she said, what you're doing on your farm just didn't start a year ago. She said, a lot of our nominations have come from people who are doing some really good things. And she said, some of them are even better than what you're doing. But she said, they've just started in the last year to 2 years. And like I mentioned to you, that we've been planting more berry bushes in our shelter belts. And we started that in 2003 to bring in more insects and insects pollinate. And of course, the biodiversity, when the different bird species come to eat the insects. So that really impressed them. So she said, we went around the table once, and she said, you guys got the award. So we were sponsored by the Canadian Federation of Agriculture and the Canada Honey Council. So they paid our flights there, and we went to the two-day convention. There were about 150 people there. We toured the Smithsonian's, and we saw Washington, D.C. But when we found out that we were going to be going to D.C., I phoned the committee, and I said, I've got my hat in my hand, and I'm begging. I said that, told her what had happened, and I said, I will still honor my commitment because I've told you I would do it. And she said, I'll take it to the committee. So they phoned me back about a week later, and they said, you know what? You've got to go to this. This is really something. So Marie had gotten a really, really bad cold, and she doesn't like to fly at the best of times. So she said, if I fly, I'll just get off the plane, and I'll be a wreck. So our son lives in Seattle, and he could fly round trip from Seattle to Washington, D.C., and for $300, whereas it cost me, I think, about $1,500. So met my son there, and we took in the sights. We went to the conference. The only alarming thing for me at the conference was, of 150 people there, Pete and Repeat, my son and I, were the only two farmers. And they asked me, what else can we do to get this message out about pollination, how important it is? And I said, you need to have people that are on the land, that are working with wild pollinators, that are working with honeybees, because they said, they're in the trenches. We're in the trenches. And here you've got a bunch of scientists that are giving research papers. It all sounds great, but you need the people on the land. And it was $350 for one attendance at the conference. So that's a lot of money if you've got to fly and if you're a farmer and you've got lots of work going. So that's a long answer to... I was close to being able to address, but I'm still pondering it, and I guess I'm waiting for an opportunity, and maybe it should be coming sooner than later. Yeah.
What you said about pollinators just reminded me of something I saw yesterday. I subscribe to this email thing called This Week in Engineering. And I admire engineers. I think they're very clever sometimes. Sometimes they're too clever by half. Like the one story they reported was some university in the States has I mean, they recognize that the bee population is declining, and they don't know why. So they create these little artificial bees.
Yes.
Little mechanical bees. But the only trouble is that the batteries are too heavy for them to fly. So they've got them on these little wires connected to a power source. And maybe someday they'll make batteries small enough. My gosh, we have pollinators now. Let's use the natural pollinators. Let's find out why they're declining.
And that's something that I neglected to mention, that holistic management teaches that don't keep treating symptoms. Look at the cause. And so if you're normally healthy in your house, and all of a sudden, one of your children brings home a cat, and you're sneezing, and your eyes are running, you don't go to the doctor and say, what can I take for this? The cat is the cause. And I'm sorry, but the cat has to go. And that's something that I think about as we got into this different way of farming, is that we don't have access anymore to chemicals, because we're certified organic. So we have to think a few years ahead, anticipating there's going to be a problem, and start working on it right now. And those birdhouses, those 240 birdhouses, we're anticipating every year there's a possibility of a drought. So the drought of 2002 was very severe. Within 6 miles of our place, some of the farmers sprayed their grain crops 3 times. Now, a pesticide does not just target grasshoppers. It targets good, beneficial insects. It targets also wild pollinators. And we're doing 3 demonstration plots on our farm to find out who is showing up, which wild pollinators are showing up. Moths are wild pollinators. Butterflies are. Beetles are. Wasps, bumblebees. And an ecologist from Calgary has designed, they're called eco-buffers. And the first one is 190 meters long, and it's a monoculture of 2 rows of choke cherries. So choke cherries blossom for about 3 weeks in the spring. So wild pollinators will show up for 3 weeks. That's fine. But when the blossoms are gone, they're going to go elsewhere. The next 90 meters is 10 different species of trees. There's some berry bushes in there. And so we've now opened that window to maybe 6 weeks of flowering. So that's good. They're going to stay. They'll leave the 3 weeks, and they'll come and spend another 3 weeks. So the last 90 meters is 7 rows of 20 different species of native flowering plants and 21 species of different berry bushes, conifers, deciduous trees. And the ecologist has studied the native plants in the area, and he's figured out which plants will start flowering. As soon as the first warm spell, say in April, it'll start to blossom. So it'll blossom for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Two weeks. So then he's got another flower lined up that's going to pop up maybe 2 weeks after that. So he's got it designed so that as spring and summer evolves into fall, there is always something coming into flower. So those wild pollinators, they want to stay on our farm because that's where the action is. And they're lazy. Wild pollinators are lazy. They don't want to travel more than about 150 meters into the field. So when he looked at the maps of our farm, I got maps of all of the landscape on our farms, and it shows where the trees are planted. And he said, you know what, Don? This is maybe by accident, but he said, when I look at these maps, pollinators never have to travel more than about 200 meters to maybe even 150 meters in your farm, because along the fences, you've got rows of trees, which are habitat for wild pollinators. Now you're planting these eco-buffers. You've got sloughs. You've got wetlands. He said, you've got the buffet. And he said, these guys are going to want to stay on this farm forever. So the next owner may want to grow certified organic whatever. If it's canola or if it's peas or if it's legumes that need to be pollinated, those pollinators are going to increase their yield. And that's, if we can get the industrial side to see that, hey, if we can increase yield, and if it's because of these wild pollinators, maybe we've got to start doing some of this stuff. So when we finished holistic management, I would almost go up to strangers that were farmers and say, you should try this. I was that excited about the concept. And I learned after I heard them mumble, "Who is this weirdo?" You know? So now I've backed right off, and we've decided that if they're interested, they'll come to us, and they are. We've had the Rotary Club here in Camrose hosted three young people from Australia. Two were forestry specialists, and one, I believe, was a water specialist, and they came out to our farm, and we had just planted these different eco-buffers, and they were just blown away. They just thought, wow, this is way ahead of the time. And here again, Dietmar, this is the scientists, the ecologists, being able to try their experimentation with a couple of farmers that say, use us. And so they're just so happy that they found somebody that's willing to put their hand up, and we're happy too. So it's a lot of these specialists have become our very, very good friends. Yeah.
I mean, the other thing on the depopulation of the colony collapse, we know an awful lot. It's just that the industry doesn't want to acknowledge. So Europe, I think, has now banned,
neonicotinoids for 2 years.
Yeah, neonicotinoids, to see whether it changes. Canada and the U.S. Are always fighting against it. Of course, these corporations have an amazing pressure, and we don't have a good framework for saying, hey, let's eliminate them and see whether the population actually, recovers. And so, because until you scientifically prove that this causes that, they might be all dead, right? I mean, because it's a very, very narrow frame, whereas Don's model is, well, okay, give them good food, don't move the colonies around like crazy, and don't have pesticides, and look at what happens, And